Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Happy Monday, everybody, and happy Solar Eclipse Day. Today we are going to take a look at the solar eclipse that is happening in the sign of Aries, and we're going to run it through all 12 signs to give you a refresh on your horoscopes for this eclipse. I'll review some of the basic significations of the eclipse before getting into each of your whole sign house horoscopes, just so that we kind of recall the basic signatures. But you could also go back into last week's videos to check out our horoscopes of the month that I did with Alex Amorosi, where we look at this today is sort of like refreshers, reminders. You could go back to that video for a little bit more depth and some further nuance. And then last Friday, I believe it was, I did a kind of an in-depth look at the archetypal signatures of the eclipse. So you may want to refresh on some of that as well, but today we're going to look at the horoscopes and just remind you of what topical areas of life are getting activated by virtue of the whole sign house that the eclipse falls in, which is something that I like to do on my channel. If you're newer to the channel, I like to really take a look at horoscopes according to the topics of the whole sign houses being activated, which means I recommend listening for your rising sign because that's going to be the one that corresponds most closely with the whole sign house version of your birth chart, which is what ancient astrologers looked at as well. So anyway, that's our agenda for today. Before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe. We really appreciate it when you take a second to press the like button. It helps the channel to grow. And also when you leave your comments and reflections, creates nice community. Also helps the channel to grow. So we appreciate you guys participating in that way. You can find a transcript of today's talk or any of my daily talks on the website, which is nightlightastrology.com. I'm going to take you over there right now because we have a few different things to promote before we get into our content for the day. So you go over to nightlightastrology.com. And you're going to find that there are a few things coming up in this month of April. First of all, if you go to the events page and click on live talks, you are going to see that the last of my webinars on the outer planets in love is taking place on April 18th from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern. It's $20 to register. This is a talk on the significations of Uranus in love. So whether that's in your natal chart or a transit from Uranus to Venus, transit through your seventh house, whatever it might be, we're going to be looking at how Uranus affects the topics of love and relationships as well as sexuality in this talk on the 18th. If you cannot make it live, we do send you the recording afterward. The other thing that I want to promote is if you go up to the courses page, first year course, second year course, and horary are all restarting again in June. This is the only time of the year, once a year, that year two and horary begin again. So if you go to the second year course and click on it, you can learn more about it. If you're already enrolled in the first year program, whether you're finished or not, you just have to be enrolled in year one to participate in year two. Horary astrology, anyone can participate in. We suggest having a background in traditional astrology to begin the horary course. You could also be enrolled in the first year program to take this one. Learn more about the horary course there. Of course, the big one is the new year one program, which is called Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. It's a one-year immersion into ancient Hellenistic astrology. This starts on June 16th. And if you stick around at the end of today's talk, you will find a little extra deep dive into the program that I'm attaching onto the end of my recordings for the next probably month or two as we approach the starting of the program. For people who want to learn more about the program, after the content is over, you can listen to me talk about it. One thing to mention right now is the enrollment options. You can do the early bird payment, which saves you a significant amount of money on the course of the program. If you need a payment plan, there's a 12-month payment plan that allows you to spread it out. And then for people who need a little help, the tuition assistance is available. That is open now, so be sure to enroll for that right away. We do have typically enough room for everyone, but it's always a good idea to get a head start on that. That allows you to work your tuition cost at a monthly rate into a range of options that will fit your budget. If you are a single parent, if you are in between jobs, you only work part-time, or whatever the case might be, we want to make sure that people aren't overextending themselves. We like to make sure that there's, you know, socioeconomic diversity is a hallmark of our programs, that we really welcome people of any background financially to participate. So if you need a little help to make it happen, use the tuition assistance button, come study with us in June, and stick around after the end of today's talk to hear more about this upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. Okay, so last but not least, don't forget, and I am no longer including this on the in terms of the And I had a, I was running a promo for a while promoting Ashley's upcoming herbal apprenticeship program. I had an interview that was running. If you go back to any of last week, the past couple of week videos at the end, you can find an interview with Ashley. Her Herbal Foundations apprenticeship also begins at the end of the month on April 24th. It is not too late to register if you want to come study herbs with Ashley. All right, those are our promotions for today. And let's get into our solar eclipse content now. All right, so if we, I'm going to put the real-time clock up on the screen, and we're going to take a look at this from the standpoint of all 12 whole sign houses and the likely significations involved with the solar eclipse. What features generally define a solar eclipse in Aries? Actually, let's maybe before I put the screen up, let me pause and let's do a little refresher. So solar eclipses, unlike lunar eclipses, we just had a lunar eclipse in Libra, which brings things to conclusion. Lunar eclipses are like the fruit, the karmic fruit on the tree falling off. It is a harvesting moment, full moons are, and they generally correspond to doors that are closing. As one of my favorite teachers, one of the first things I ever learned about eclipses is that my early teachers, Rebecca Gordon, said lunar eclipses are like doors that are closing, and they won't ever open again. They're done. And it can mean that there are karmic expiration dates and fruiting or harvesting karmically. So that's the mood and flavor of lunar eclipses. Of course, in Libra, that pointed toward the realm of Venus, relationships, etc. Then if you switch gears to solar eclipses, they are like powerful new moons, which means new beginnings. The new beginning of a solar eclipse might be flavored by loss or death or transformation or healing crisis because the light of the sun is being eclipsed. And so sometimes solar eclipses are born out of necessity, new beginnings that are born out of the struggle or turmoil of things shifting dramatically. But also they're just very powerful versions of new moons. And in Aries, the cardinal sign of spring from the standpoint of the ancient zodiac really points toward the initiation through the will and through our agency and enthusiasm and excitement, a lot of fire behind the sign of Aries, of course, that we're going to be starting something new, initiating a new cycle. So it is sort of a quintessential exalted sun in Aries, the first sign of the zodiac, first sign of spring, a solar eclipse, all of which point toward youthful new beginnings. Now, maybe born of some tension or crisis or conflict or some dramatic turn of events that forces our hand and we have to act, we have to initiate some new season of growth or activity. But nonetheless, it's a powerful form of new beginning. Now, with the North Node, we also get the sign of augmentation, amplification, things growing, and desire. I was listening to something. I don't remember where I heard this. It was on YouTube or Instagram or something like that. And people were talking about the etymology of the words connected to the stars. Someone sent it to me and I thought, this is so cool. And the word desire, actually, its etymological roots. Let me read you this because it's kind of interesting. Let me just pull it up. Yeah, so the root of desire is what we wish or what we long for from the phrase de sidere, from the stars, or from Sidus or Sidus, Sidaris, heavenly body, star, or constellation. So it's sort of like desire has this etymological connection to what we wish upon, what we wish for upon the stars. Because the stars were seen as the ones that granted or organized or denied our desires or wishes. The North Node is always longing for and wishing for things that it believes will make us happy. The North Node is sort of like an emblem of where our focus is currently. And this focus has something to do with what we think the next step is, what we think will make us happy. Now, there's some warning built in, especially with Rahu in the ancient Indian tradition that, it may give us something, but we should be careful of how much we expect that this wish or desire can grant us, as opposed to the idea of being present and satisfied in the fullness of our being, in the fullness of being itself. That's not to say that we should all just sit in some position of neutrality and not live lives, but it's sort of like, the choose your own adventure is taking us in the direction of the North Node, but be careful that you don't place too many expectations, unreal, false expectations on what this direction can give us, that we are curious and adventurous, but careful and cautious, not overly inflated. The North Node will tend to excite and amplify the newness of things in the solar eclipses to the extent that we it overpromises and underdelivers. So we have to be a little bit cautious about that. But otherwise, very much, you know, new moon, solar eclipse, new beginnings, Aries, new beginnings, exalted sun, right? North node, amplification of new desires that we hope will take us in some direction that will satisfy our desires as they've never been satisfied before. So there's a lot of hope and excitement and enthusiasm around this eclipse. But that doesn't change the fact that it could be born out of the necessity of the circumstances changing in ways that are reflected by the light of the sun being eclipsed, which means, wow, I wasn't expecting that. That's dramatic. I have to move and adapt out of necessity. But then there's a lot of excitement maybe in that process. So those are some of the significations we might look at with this solar eclipse overall. Now let's refresh ourselves on the whole sign house topics. And I recommend listening to this by your rising sign. That will accord to the ancient version of your birth chart, which is in whole sign. So when you look at this, you're saying, okay, Aries rising. So if you're in Aries rising, you could listen to this for your sun sign as well. All it means when you're doing that is that your sun sign horoscopes are based on a whole sign house arrangement, putting your sun sign on the ascendant. So that unless your sun is actually in the first house of your birth chart, there's no actual correspondence to your birth chart. It's just a divinatory spread that's based on putting the sun sign rising. So that's why I recommend listening to your rising sign, because the transits will actually match up with the houses they're traveling through by whole sign according to your whole sign birth chart. And again, for thousands of years, that's what astrologers used in the East and the West as a major house system. So anyway, okay, Aries rising. Let me get my epic pen. Here we go. I've been away on vacation, and my epic pen was hiding. All right, here we are. So for Aries, we've got it in the first house. The initiations, the new beginnings are focused on self, identity, body, health, anything related to your physical health, your spiritual, mental, emotional, psychological health, well-being, shifts or changes in how you perceive yourself, how you act or exert your will in the world. So this is a transit for Aries of individuation, which can also speak to the temple of the body and how your spirit soul is inhabiting it and what it needs. So a profoundly existential and individual transit for Aries. If we go forward to Taurus, this takes place in the 12th house. There are two basic ways that I like to look at the 12th house. One would be in terms of things that are undermining us, things that we have to be careful of that aren't necessarily good for us, that either come from us or that come from other people that seek to sabotage or undermine us. You could call this unconscious material, doesn't necessarily have to be demonic or malicious, but getting in touch with that is an important part of this eclipse. This eclipse cycle brings attention to things that are in the environment that are undermining us and the need to address it. On the other hand, the 12th house is often associated with things that are seeking incorporation consciously that are unconscious, like unexplored or unrealized parts of ourselves that are seeking conscious integration. And so that can be very positive to learn things and find things about ourselves that can make us stronger, wiser, healthier, happier, in this case, Aries kinds of things. It might be about will or strength or assertiveness or conflicts and so forth. Personal strength, ability to overcome challenges. How are you seeking to bring more of those kinds of skills or abilities into your sense of who you are? So these are different ways of looking at a 12th house eclipse for Tauruses. For Geminis, this reaches into your 11th house, which is going to be the place of allies, friends, groups, and really your long-term wishes, dreams, and aspirations. So for Geminis, a new cycle of hoping, longing, wishing, striving, aiming toward things that are that constitute your dreams and goals, usually in the professional or vocational world, or the world of larger societal relationships. This can also be about new cycles of activity among friends or groups or allies, new people coming into your life that you're going to partner or collaborate with, but also new crusades, new conquests that you're taking on right now. So those are some of the things to watch for if you're a Gemini rising. For Cancers, this takes place in your 10th house, which is the place of your career. Now, if you are too young to have one, you don't have one, or you're retired, then think about this as the house that is dictating the activities that you are most involved with that bring you from the private sphere into the public sphere. So whatever kinds of activities engage you in the larger world, the larger public sphere of life. Now, for some people in retirement, that might not be the like the world's biggest thing. But still, for most people, you're going to find that this has something to do with a new cycle of karma that is beginning in your career house. I think about my wife, Ashley, who's a Cancer rising, who is starting her Herbal Foundation course at the end of this month of April. That very much coincides with her coming back to work for the first time in a couple of years. So that's something that is very easy to track, kind of obvious. Anyway, but it can look different for different people. New jobs, new boss, new something new in the work environment. So those are all different kinds of possibilities. I have some kind of app ticking here in the background, so I'm just going to change that. Give me just a second here. Da-da-da-da. There it is. It's like going on and on. Okay. All right, back to the chart. Sorry about that, guys. Here we go. Okay, so for Cancers, a new cycle of activity forming in the career house. For Leos, it is taking place in your ninth house. That is the place that is what's called God and the joy of the sun. A new understanding, new intelligence, new wisdom, new teachers, new learning. If you're a teacher, new ways of teaching. This can also be a house that takes you abroad, broadens your horizons, shifts your outlook, changes your guiding beliefs, initiates into deeper religious experiences, doctrines, dogmas, philosophies, political convictions. It's also about the adventure of learning and expansion of wisdom and understanding in general, and a new cycle that's beginning in that area of life. So very helpful in terms of starting to clarify your beliefs, your principles, a process of learning and teaching, and a change or shift of paradigm or belief structures. Now, that doesn't happen all at once, but it certainly signals the beginning of a new period of learning and, expansion of wisdom. So for Virgos, we move this along into the eighth house, a place that is involved with soul contracts. So you think about the way in which our lives are made up. There's a wing in our psyches, and inside that wing there are all these rooms, and in the rooms are people, and they're sitting at tables, and there's contracts that we've all signed on the tables, right? And these are the contracts that, for better or worse, are here to be part of how we learn. So we have contracts with enemies, we have contracts with friends, we have contracts with family members, all sorts of interesting contracts. And these are the big ones. The eighth house refers to those people and situations in our life that we have some kind of contractual obligation to. In that way, the eighth house reflects our debts. It also reflects those people who are indebted to us, and it reflects reciprocal dynamics, and it reflects the kinds of things that we get entangled by means of, as well as the need to liberate ourselves from various kinds of entanglements. And Aries eclipse, as Aries tends to be so focused on individual strength, sovereignty, power, etc., could have us attracted to people who have a great deal of strength or power, and thinking, what can they do for us? If you're Virgo rising, I would watch for that as maybe being something alluring. Maybe there's a positive potential there. But with Mercury retrograde as well, I think you could be revising contracts and saying, you know what, this person has some kind of strength, but is it worth it? Am I entangling myself with someone who's domineering or who's dictatorial or something like that? So the exchange of power, power dynamics in relationships might be especially important for Virgos right now, and thinking about what constitutes freedom and what kinds of relationships with what kinds of strengths or powers are positive versus negative. So a new cycle of activity opening up around karmic contracts, debts, entanglements, and hopefully some mutually beneficial relationships as well. All right, for Libras, this goes into the quintessential, house of relationships, of marriage in the seventh house. Venus is there. Mercury is retrograde there. And with an individuating tendency in Aries, you got to think about, for Libras especially, who tend to be so other-oriented through Venus, when your ruling planet Venus is in Aries, thinking, okay, what is the balance of power in my relationships? Am I exerting myself, expressing myself, making my own needs clear? Am I articulating my presence as an individual within a relationship, or am I tending to get steamrolled by the needs or demands of other people? So the balance between self and other comes to mind really strongly for Libras in this solar eclipse. You could also think of this solar eclipse as introducing or initiating new exciting things that you're feeling really fired up about in love and relationships. I mean, it doesn't, just because it's Aries doesn't mean, oh, it's a Mars ruled sign, so everything is about conflict and battle and so forth. This could be also about new cycles of karma in relationships that are healthier because they are reflecting a better balance between self and other, that you can do both at once. But anyway, look for the story of love relationships and power dynamics and sharing and encouraging one another. And also just again, the idea that we want a balance between harmonization between self and other, and individuation of each person within a relationship. All right, go to Scorpio next, which places the stellium into the sixth house. And the solar eclipse, of course, in the sixth house is now in the house that was called the Joy of Mars, a solar eclipse in Mars's sign and a house that was associated with Mars. This is a cycle that may speak to a new round of work and service and sacrifice for Scorpios. What do you care the most about? What are you most willing to work, sweat, labor, throw a little bit of yourself into the sacrificial flames on behalf of? This is the solar eclipse in Aries that can, at its best, open up the potential for growing, learning, developing, cultivating anything according to a higher level of work and sacrifice, of selflessness and service. However, you also want to look very carefully at what things you are committing yourself to in labor, service, and sacrifice that are exhausting, draining, taxing on your body, your mind, your health, and make sure that you're not giving yourself to things that are not bringing you happiness or joy. So some critical developments there. You also think about things like employees, pets, and animals, sort of other sixth house topics that could be activated during this eclipse season. All right, for Sagittarians, this is falling into the fifth house. A house that was called the Joy of Venus in the place of pleasure and creativity associated with like joyfulness. So any kind of creative endeavor that brings you joy, which could be pregnancy, children, romance, sex, but also, dancing, art, painting, but also just like leisure and pleasure. Like, what do you do for fun? These are fifth house concerns. A solar eclipse in this house suggests a new cycle or season of activity that is here to amplify, augment, increase, or enhance your pleasure and happiness. So whether that's creative projects or inclusion or better incorporation of the creative dynamics of your personality into your work or your relationships, this is a cycle of activity that initiates something like pregnancy or a new creative project. But the whole idea here is more happiness, more joy, more creativity, more fulfillment of the pleasure body. And Sagittarians get the benefit of having this come in. One thing I'll say for Sagittarius is kind of interesting is that, underneath all of this, Mars is ruling the eclipse and Mars is conjoining Saturn in your fourth house. Some of this might also have to do with greater joy or happiness that is derived from some kind of shift or change happening around family with Mars and Saturn in the fourth. Anyway, just a little extra nugget there. Capricorns. So for Caps, replacing all of this Aries energy right into the fourth house, the place of home, family, roots, foundations, relationships, parental karma. And so I wonder here, a new cycle of activity with respect to roots, home, family, that could mean moving. That could mean a greater degree of freedom that's being needed. And it happens by means of extricating yourself from unhealthy elements in the family karma. Like you're saying, I'm going to be someone different than how my mom or my dad were or what my family was like. I'm going to shift or change something about the environment in which I live or the foundation that supports me and grants me some sense of ease, peace, security. So there's a real individuating, a looking at youthful or karmic roots, family karma, and a shift or change around the roots of your life that ultimately is about greater freedom, flexibility, ease, peace, stability on the level of home and that resting place. So look for that cycle of karma to be launching around this time forward for Capricorns. All right, Aquarians, we have this energy in the third house, maybe one of the most difficult houses to describe. It was called the Joy of the Moon, and it was also called Dia or Goddess, all of which point to this as a place that was literally linked to the physical material world, the world of fortune and circumstance that's swirling around us. It's kind of like the third house has this sense of karmic luck associated with it. Go to the grocery store, see someone you know, go to the gym, run into an old time friend. The third house is really about the karma that is always coming in and out of our lives based on the environment around us, the local everyday scene. It also has to do with the mental, emotional, and sort of ecological makeup of the environment that we live in. So there's a mental, emotional, and physical environment that we live in, all of which the moon represented in ancient astrology. Third house called the joy of the moon. There's an environment that has to do with our neighborhood or our city or village, so to speak, the culture that we're a part of or the different cultures that we inhabit. All of these places are a little nebulous because it's like trying to describe an ecosystem rather than one particular thing in it. And so when you have a new cycle of karma opening up, a new season of activity being initiated by a solar eclipse in this sign, what you can say is that there's either some new feature in the environment that's going to become important, or you're making a change to the environment that's going to be important. And that change, again, could be anything ranging from mental, emotional, physical environment that you inhabit in yourself, or it could be something that has to do with the world around you. That includes things like siblings, family members, anything that is sort of like that reflects the makeup of the like village of your psyche. You know what I mean? So think about a new round of activity opening up in the environment of your life. I know that's kind of, it's a little nebulous to talk about, but you'll notice it if you pay attention for sure. Okay, so for Pisces, last but not least, we have the eclipse falling into the second house, which is the place of assets, resources, what we have or are in possession of, what we are cultivating or developing. This can be people, places, things, education, skills, but it also is reflective of income and expenditures in terms of like money, assets, possessions. So a solar eclipse here suggests the development of new skills and resources, or the cultivation of new skills and resources, or it suggests that new resources are being made available to us, or that new income or expenditures are going to be presenting themselves, probably in the near future. With Mercury retrograde, it makes me wonder if Pisceans aren't kind of revising or shifting something about money, finances, skills, resources, values, if there isn't some kind of shift or reorientation. You might be looking at a shift or reorientation in values or assets or resources, how you manage them, how you use them, in terms of something like your identity, your health, your strengths, your limitations, because we also have the ruler Mars co-present with Saturn in your first house. So anyway, that is a brief trip through all 12 whole sign horoscopes here on the day of the solar eclipse. I hope that this has been useful for you. And don't forget, if you stick around right after this talk is done, you'll see me pop up and tell you more about the first year program that starts on June 16th. So if you are interested in studying with us and you have questions about that program, stick around for a little informational content after I sign off. All right, that is it for today. I hope you guys are having a good one, that you have a very positive eclipse, and we'll see you again soon. Hey everyone, thanks for sticking around. I am going to tell you a little bit about our upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, my year one course in ancient Hellenistic astrology that begins on June 16th. If you'd like to learn more about it, of course, you can always do some digging and looking at the course page on your own. I'll take you over there right now and walk you through it. But if you want to, you can go over yourself and look. Nightlightastrology.com is the website. Click on the courses tab and go to the first year course. This is the one that begins on June 16th, the perfect place to start for people who would like to learn more about natal astrology from the Hellenistic point of view. So this is a one-year course in Hellenistic astrology, which is the oldest form of astrology, and it is the form from which all subsequent forms of astrology come from. It shares a lot in its roots with ancient Indian astrology. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what characterizes Hellenistic astrology, but just to familiarize you with this page, when you go to the first year course page and scroll down, you can learn more about everything that's included in the course. Some of the main features include 30 classes on the year, These classes are spread out through units of curriculum. And in between the major units of curriculum, we have breakout study sessions led by our tutoring staff. We also have an interactive group forum discussion that is staffed with tutors year-round. You always get your questions answered within 24 hours. So there's a lot of support built into the program as we work our way through the curriculum. We also have recommended reading, listening, optional quizzes, flashcards, bonus lectures, more than you could possibly read in a year, honestly. So we just have a large and long biography and sort of library of suggested bonus content that will fill in blanks and also supplement and deepen the material that we are studying. You get lifetime access to all the recordings. If you cannot attend the webinars live, they meet on the weekends, but if you can't attend them live, then you are welcome to follow along with the recordings, which are made available to you on the class website. So this class meets on Sundays from noon Central to 2 p.m. Central or 1 Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern time. And you might translate that, I guess, if you're on the West Coast, it would be what, 10 a.m. to noon Pacific time. During the program, in addition to working our way through all of the major curriculum, the major foundational elements of Hellenistic astrology, we place a strong emphasis on preparing ourselves to read charts for other people. Whether this is a hobby for you or something that you are endeavoring to practice professionally, the course is built for people who are really there for a lot of different reasons. This is your hobby. This is your passion. You hope to do this for really no one other than yourself or maybe friends or family or someone who really decides they want to start a practice. You can take this class at whatever level of interest or depth that you want because of the amount of material that we make available to you inside and outside of class. You always have access to the program too, so you can always, you know, take it at your own pace. You can attend live, follow along with the recordings, some combination of both. And then the breakout study sessions are really helpful in addition to our interactive group forum discussion. You can always ask us questions. You can email me anytime with questions. So we have a lot of support in place. Now, the curriculum, we move through the foundational elements of ancient astrology. You may look at the curriculum and say, well, I know something about these things already, but not really, not unless you've studied Hellenistic astrology, because the way that ancient astrologers talked about houses, signs, planets, aspects, essential dignities, chart delineation is radically different from what most people learn when they start studying modern astrology. The reason for that is that it's only been in the past couple of decades that we have finally had access to the vast majority of ancient texts on Hellenistic astrology. We were literally missing the bulk of our ancient tradition. So the kind of rebirth or reawakening of ancient astrology is really new, which makes this very exciting because everything you've learned in modern astrology is probably coming from the lens of what is called psychological astrology, which is a way of looking at the birth chart in terms of the planet signs, houses, and the way in which they may relate to your psychological makeup or profile. In this way, birth charts are a little bit like an elaborate Myers-Briggs. So you have the personality profiling, which is the way that most people look at planets, houses, and signs. You'll notice my Mars, my Venus, and they think of them as aspects or dimensions of your character and personality. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, we utilize much of the same language, and we certainly have that approach available to us in this program because ancient astrologers also looked at the chart in terms of psychological makeup. However, one of the main distinctions between modern astrology and ancient astrology is the emphasis that ancient astrologers placed on prediction. They looked at the chart in terms of a field of karma that defines the native or the individual's fate or destiny. And so we look at houses, signs, planets, aspects as a way of understanding what patterns, themes, and topics are going to be most prevalent and at what times, because they also had a very elaborate system of timing techniques. The year one program is all about learning to read the birth chart and understanding the ancient hermetic sort of Platonic Pythagorean philosophy that was behind the establishment of all of the doctrines and teachings of astrology itself. So it's really about understanding where everything comes from. It's the why behind everything that greatly empowers people when they're learning astrology. It is not nearly the same when you just study lists of adjectives and descriptions for houses, signs, planets, aspects. We want to understand why. Why do we do these things at all? Where did it all come from? And when you understand that, Then you have something like a skeleton key by means of which you can access your own creativity, your own intuition, rather than being told, just play these notes in this order and it will sound good. You're learning to improvise. Which, you know, could anyone ever want to play? Why would you want to play an instrument if someone told you, well, here's how to play. Play this, play this, play that. And you never learned how to play something of your own, or you never learned how to use the scales in ways that were magical and, you know, pertain to your own genie, your own genius. So when we study ancient astrology, one of the main things we're doing is we're taking people beyond anything that they think they've learned about houses, signs, planets, aspects, and we're teaching them where it all came from. And once you have that, then you're really cooking with fire. You have a magical, intuitive capacity that is very rare and precious in astrology. So anyway, we move through a lot of different elements, but not in the way that you've ever learned them before. And that's a really important distinction. So anyway, after all of that has been said, in each unit, we spend, maybe up to 10 hours on houses. And then we have a breakout study session, and then we have reading and bonus material. So when we talk about houses in this class, you are learning where the concept of a house ever came from in the first place, what it is, how it works, and how it's different from a sign. You're also going to unlearn and break a lot of bad habits, because not by any intentional ignorance, but modern astrology, being bereft of its ancient textual tradition, has been teaching a lot of things that are just not in line with where the actual theoretical foundations of astrology come from. So you're also going to break some bad habits, which is really good for people who maybe know a little bit about astrology already, but are seeking to clarify and understand theory in the context of the 2000 year history of astrology. So anyway, this class is going to prepare you to read birth charts for other people. But then by the end, one of the great things about the program is that the way we do that is not just by pumping you full of theory and history and philosophy. We are also, in the last portion of the program, inviting live clients into the class. And that's great, because when we have live clients come in, you're going to see me read from them using the theory and techniques that we've been studying. And you're going to see how they can be applied artfully, as well as, giving you some tools and methods and techniques to use to set you up for success. Seeing live astrology practice while studying it is the best way to learn. So the last portion of the program, we turn toward that hands-on approach. Anyway, so that's a bit about the program. If you have any questions you want to ask, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. We're happy to answer any questions you have whatsoever. I also want to point people to the payment options at the bottom. Early bird payment saves you $500 off. That is a great way to save. It's available all the way up to the start of the program. The payment plan is breaking the tuition into 12 monthly installments. If that works better for you, no worries, you can do that. And then need-based tuition. We, for many, many years now, dating back to 2010 when I started teaching astrology, I've always had some kind of sliding scale option available for people when studying astrology. Sacred science like this should be accessible to people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. So we pride ourselves on making sure that there is tuition assistance available, so that if your budget doesn't match with the payment price that we ask for, and that's an honest assessment that we trust you to make, that you can take advantage of the tuition assistance and set your price within a sliding scale that we provide for your monthly tuition for 12 months through the program. So please feel free to apply for that if it makes sense to you. We don't want people hurting themselves or overextending themselves. A price that fits your budget is available through the need-based tuition. We just ask that you apply early, because we do fill up sometimes. So anyway, that is it. I hope that you will consider studying with us, and thanks for taking time to learn more about the program. See you later.